issue of Torah Mi-Sinai, we'll try to give a definition of exactly what that means. Of course, the Torah was given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Aseret HaDibros were proclaimed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. So what exactly do we mean when we say as a significant principle, as a significant point of our faith, that we believe in Torah Mi-Sinai? We just believe in that historical event. We subscribe to the fact that God revealed himself to the Jewish people so many thousands of years ago, and he proclaimed the Aseret HaDibros in Har Sinai. So we always have the feeling that it means something much deeper than that, something much more than that. What does it mean? So generally assume that it was proclaimed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. So what exactly do we mean when we say as a significant principle, as a significant point of our faith, that we believe in Torah Mi-Sinai? We just believe in that historical event. We subscribe to the fact that God revealed himself to the Jewish people so many thousands of years ago, and he proclaimed the Aseret HaDibros in Har Sinai. So we always have the feeling that it means something much deeper than that, something much more than that. What does it mean? So generally assume that what this means is that our obligation to observe mitzvot stems from that Gilui Shechina at Har Sinai. At that time when God revealed himself to the Jewish people, he told us that he wants us to observe all of these mitzvot, and our obligation today stems from that time. This is not exactly correct, though. When we read a little further in the Chumash, when we get to the Parshios and the end of Chumash Devarim, the Parshios Kisavoy, we read of the second Krisos Bris, the second covenant made between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael. When we study the Teicheche is called the Brachas of Klolos, the blessings and the curses that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, if we keep his mitzvot, he will give us blessings, and if we violate his averes, he will punish us. So there's this long Teicheche in Kisavoy, there is a Takona of Ezra that we still observe at Ayam Hazeh today, that the Teicheche in the end of Vayikra, the Teicheche in Mechukaisai, is supposed to be read in Shul before Shavuot. We just read it 2 days ago on Shabbos. The Shabbos before, not the last Shabbos before Shavuot, the Shabbos before the last Shabbos before. And the Teicheche in Kisavoy is supposed to be read, which it is, the Shabbos before, the last Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah, the second Shabbos before Rosh Hashanah. So there are two teichachas in the Chumash. At the end of that second teichach, at the end of that brachas of klolos that appears in Parshas Kisavoy, the concluding pasuk reads, "Ela divrei habris." This is the text of the covenant Kadosh Baruch Hu entered into with the Jewish people. Novad habris, over and above the covenant that he entered into with Bnei Yisrael at Har Sinai. Why was there a need for two resources? Why was there a need for two covenants? One at Har Sinai, and a repeat later on the exact same mitzvah. The exact same mitzvahs were included in the Krisos Bris later, right before the death of Moshe Rabbeinu at Arvis Moyel. And that's the text of the Teicheche in Kisavoy. But the Chumash itself explains the answer to this, and we continue to read a little further. After you finish Kisavoy, the very next sentence is Nitzavim. In the beginning of Nitzavim, Moshe Rabbeinu continues to speak of this new covenant that he entered upon, that was entered upon between the Jewish nation and HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end of the 40 years of traveling in the desert. And he tells them, this new covenant that I'm making with you is not only with those people who are alive today, at the end of the 40 years of the traveling in the desert. This Krisos Bris, this new covenant, will include all of the Doros HaGoyim, all of the future generations. In other words, the simple reading of the Chumash implies clearly that the original covenant, the original Krisos Bris that we entered into with God, Har Sinai, was only binding on the people who lived in that generation. It would never have included us. We were not alive at that time. And the only reason why we today are obligated to fulfill all of God's mitzvahs is because of the second Krisos Bris, is because of the second covenant that was entered upon with Bnei Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the end of the 40 years. That's the simple reading of the Chumash. In fact, when you read the text of the Teicheche, the text of the Brachas of Klolos, the blessings and the curses, and the Chukaisai, as opposed to the Brachas of Klolos, the Kisava, you will notice that there's a major difference between them. In the Sedrik, in the Kriyas HaTorah that we just read this past Shabbos, the Teicheche and the Chukaisai, everything is written in the plural. In the Chukaisai Teilechu, Chukaisai Tishmoru, Vaasisem, everything is in the plural. When you read the Teicheche in Kisavoy, everything is in the singular. Every single pasuk is in the singular. What exactly does that indicate? So the rabbis had a tradition where they pointed out that whenever you have a pasuk that's written, whenever you have a din in the Chumash, or any description in the Chumash that's written in the singular, so the Torah is speaking to the whole Jewish community as a whole, to the Klal Yisrael as one unit. Whenever the Torah has a din, or a mitzvah, or a parsha, which is written in the plural, so it's speaking to each and every individual person as an individual, as a separate person, not as a klal, not as a tzibur. For example, just to demonstrate, we have two descriptions of the mitzvah of Sfira Sa'ayim. In between Pesach and Shavuot, we have a mitzvah every night to count Sfira Sa'ayim. Today was the 42nd day, yesterday was the 42nd day of Sfira Sa'ayim. 41st day of Sfira Sa'ayim. Yesterday was the 41st day of Sfira Sa'ayim. So the Chumash records the din of Sfira Sa'ayim in two different parashas. In parashas Emor, in the Little Chumash Vayikra, as well as in parashas Re'eh, in the Little Chumash Dvarim. In one version, the mitzvah is written in the singular, the Safar Telecho, Sheva Shaps Hashon, the Safar Telecho, in the singular, you should count. And the other parasha is written in the plural, was Sfartem Lachem. You, in the plural, you should all count. So the rabbis commented, both in the Talmud and in the Sefer, and in the Sefer, in all three sources, the rabbis commented that these two parshiyos seem to be speaking about two different types of mitzvahs. The one is the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer that's required of the entire Jewish nation as a whole. And how can the entire Jewish nation fulfill the mitzvah? By having a Bezen HaGadol, the Sanhedrin, the chief court, the high court in Yerushalayim, has a mitzvah to count Sfiras HaOmer in order to determine when Shavuos will be. We know that it's the responsibility of the Bezdin to determine Shabbos. We know what Shabbos is. Every week there's a Shabbos. But Yontif doesn't happen by itself. Yontif has to be established by the Rabbanim. Which Rabbanim? Every rabbi in his local community is going to decide when Pesach should be, when Shavuot should be. So the Talmud tells us that Bezdin HaGadol, the central authority, the chief court in Yerushalayim, whose offices were in the Beit HaMikdash, they have to determine when Rosh Chodesh should be, because any given month on the Jewish calendar can have either 29 days or 30 days, it can fluctuate. And sometimes the rabbis can determine to make it 29 or 30 days, not in correspondence with the appearance of the moon. Even though the moon appears, they can start to make tomorrow Rosh Chodesh. But even though the moon didn't appear, they can start to make today Rosh Chodesh. So it's up to the rabbis, up to the Bezdin HaGadol, up to the Sanhedrin, the chief court in Yerushalayim, in the Beis HaMikdash, to determine when Yom Tov should be observed. So since the establishment of Pesach is to be determined by the Bezdin HaGadol, by the Sanhedrin in Yerushalayim, so the commentaries on the Sefer point out that the same is true regarding the establishment of Shavuot. Shavuot doesn't happen by itself. You have to have somebody counting Sfiras HaOmer, you have to count the weeks in between Pesach and Shavuot, and after the 7 full weeks are up, then Shavuot will be established. And that obligation is really required. That's not up to every individual person, that's up to the whole Klal Yisrael as a whole. That's why it's written in the singular. It's a part of the Chol, that's the mitzvah hamutelas al ha-tzibur. And the way that mitzvah is observed, the way it's fulfilled is that the Bezdin HaGadol in Yerushalayim, the members of the Sanhedrin, have the mitzvah to count the Sfiras HaOmer on behalf of Klal Yisrael. The other pasuk, speaking of Sfiras HaOmer, reads as Sfartem Lachem in the plural. And the Talmud quotes the comment of the Tanoim from the Sifro, and the Sifrei Sfartem Lachem, should say Sfiro Lachalechot V'yechot. So it's not sufficient that the Bezdin HaGadol should count, that it should just be a mitzvah that's fulfilled by the whole Jewish people, and the Bezdin HaGadol should represent them. No, it's an individual mitzvah that should be fulfilled by each and every individual person. And that's a separate mitzvah, the mitzvah to count Sfiras HaOmer that each individual person has to observe, has nothing to do with establishing Shavuot. That part of the mitzvah that by counting Sfiras HaOmer, you determine, you establish when Shavuot will be after the 49 days are up, that part of the mitzvah is only to be fulfilled by the Bezdin HaGadol. There are two parts to the mitzvah. The part of the mitzvah that's required of each and every individual person, that has nothing to do with establishing Shavuot. That's a separate mitzvah that counts for Yerushalayim, to show that true freedom in the Jewish understanding is we are free to observe God's commandments. On Pesach we celebrate Man Chayuseinu, it's the holiday of freedom. So the Torah tells us you shouldn't think that freedom is like some other people think. We're free to go rob banks, and we're free to pollute the waters, and we're free to harass other people. And we're free to insult other people, we're free to make noise in the streets at 3 o'clock at night, we're free to do whatever crazy things we want. That's not freedom. Freedom means, Ein lecha ben chor, ein lecha mishalosek b'Torah. The Pasuk says that the Aseres Hadibus were engraved, the Ten Commandments were engraved on the two stones that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down from heaven, so the word that's used is chorus, and it's spelled with the same letters as chayrus, freedom. So the Mishnah comments in Pirkei Avos, en locha ben chorin, and the Mishnah osin katera ben true freedom, is the one who observes God's mitzvot. That's why we are commanded to count spirits only between Pesach and Shavuos. That it should be like a connection. Ramban says like a long chalamoy that connects between Pesach and Shavuos to demonstrate and stress this idea. That we shouldn't get carried away with the notion of freedom. Freedom is very important. We should understand fully what freedom means. We are free to observe God's mitzvot. So just like the Talmud commented there, that you have two parashios, speaking about the same, seems like it's speaking about the same of Sfiras Omer, counting the days between Pesach and Shavuos. But because one of the parashios is written in the singular, one is written in the plural, so the rabbis understood that they're really talking about two different things. The one that's written in the plural is speaking each and every individual person as an individual. So it says, every Jew has a mitzvah to count Sfiras Omer. And then the parasha that's written in the singular is speaking to the entire Jewish nation as a whole, that the Klal Yisrael has a mitzvah, the way for Klal Yisrael to fulfill a mitzvah is by having the Bez Nagadol perform that mitzvah. They are the representatives of the Klal Yisrael. And they have to count Sfiras Omer for a different purpose, in order to be Koveya Shavuos, to establish when Shavuos will be. And the same is true regarding several other parashios in the Chumash. We have several parashios in the Torah, several sections of the Torah, where the same din is repeated, once in the written, once in the singular, once in the plural. And the rabbis understand that the one that's written in the plural implies that it's speaking to each and every individual person as a yochid, and one that's written in the singular is speaking to the Klal Yisrael. So here, this is one of the discrepancies, this is one of the differences between the two teichachas. The teichachah that we just read 2 days ago, the parashas b'chukaisai, everything is written in the plural, to indicate that that priest's bridge, that covenant that was entered upon between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Bnei Yisrael Har Sinai, was a bridge with each and every individual person who was present at that time. And whoever was not there, we were not there, so we were not included in that Christian bridge. So our obligation to keep mitzvahs does not stem from the Tzivui Hashem, from God's commandment, our sin. Our obligation today to observe God's mitzvah stems from the second Christian bridge, from the second covenant that was entered upon soon before the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, after the 40 years of traveling in the desert, when the second covenant was made. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, this bridge, this covenant is not only Lo yitchen levatchen, anochi, not only with you people who are here today, this bridge, this covenant is going to include all the future generations, because that second covenant is written in the singular, it's not written in the plural, to imply that that's speaking to the whole Klal Yisrael. The whole Klal Yisrael means past, present, and future. Everybody's included to constitute one big Klal Yisrael. So getting back to our theme, getting back to our topic, what exactly do we mean when we stress that the Orthodox believe in Torah Misina? We understand what we mean when we say we believe in Torah Min HaShamayim. We believe that these are God-given mitzvot. Not only that they were at one time given by God, we believe that they were accurately transmitted. And as we observe the mitzvot today, this is what God has commanded us. There are those who believe that one time God gave the mitzvot to the Jewish people. Yes, there was a divine revelation at which time God gave the mitzvot, but over the course of so many centuries, it's already over 2,000 years, over the course of the centuries, so many errors crept in that there's no similarity living and dead, the way we observe the mitzvot today, the way they were commanded by HaKadosh Baruch Hu 3,000 years ago. That's not what we believe. We believe HaTorah HaMetzuya Ata B'Yaveinu, He had a student of the Moshe Rabbeinu. We believe that the Torah as we observe it today is an accurately transmitted Torah. This is exactly what God commanded, of course, with a lot of laws with the Rabbanim, a lot of rabbinical laws that were added on, a lot of biblical laws that were developed over the centuries, but basically this is Torah Min HaShamayim. This is what we mean when we say Torah Min HaShamayim. But in addition to Torah Min HaShamayim, that we believe that the Torah was given by God, and God saw to it that all of the Torah was preserved accurately, and our observance today is a correct observance of God's mitzvahs, we also say we believe in Torah Misinai. What is this additional concept? So the simple understanding is not really correct. The simple understanding is that we believe that our obligation to keep God's mitzvah stems from the fact that we entered into a covenant with HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Har Sinai. But that's not correct. That covenant at Har Sinai, it says in the Chumash, in Parashat Nitzavim, was only binding on the people who were present at that generation. And our obligation to keep mitzvahs today, it says clearly in the Chumash, in Parashat Nitzavim, stems from the second covenant. So many assume that when we speak, when we insist that we believe in Torah Misinai, what we mean is that the text of the Torah that we have was dictated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, dictated by God to Moshe Rabbeinu, word for word, and letter for letter. That's what we believe. Unlike all of the other books of the prophets, the Talmud tells us Moshe Rabbeinu was misnabe, his prophecy was ba'aspe gloria hamidira. He was given a direct dictation, word for word, letter for letter. The other prophets saw a prophecy about the glory of Sheinim here. They weren't given dictation. They were shown a chazon and a mare. That's what it says in the Chumash in the end of Parshat Vahaloisko. If any other prophet gets a prophecy, he'll have a dream and he'll see a vision, and then he will interpret it using his own words with the divine inspiration. He will be inspired divinely to interpret this vision. Moshe Rabbeinu was given a direct dictation of words and letters. So there are those who assume that Torah Misinai means that this is the Torah that we have, the Chamishu Chumshei Torah, Reishis, Shemos, and so on. This is the Torah that was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. This is not correct. It says to the Farish in the Chumash that it's not correct. You see, there were those Bible critics who always attack the Chumash. So they claim that the Chumash as we have it is a composite of different texts. And this argument that they have, the whole attack against the Chumash, has been lingering on for a long time. It's really hard to understand how come it has had so much success by so many non-Jews, and by many Jews as well. How come so many people fall for this baloney? We have such a strong historical tradition that this is the Torah that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. So how come those that came up with this whole, they came up with such a novel idea that the Torah is a composite of different texts? How come they were so successful in getting so many people to believe this? So the answer is, like Rashi points out in his commentary on Parashat Shlach, Moshe Rabbeinu sent the miraculous when he sent the spies to tour Eretz Israel, and the spies come back, the 12 representatives of the tribes come back to Moshe Rabbeinu and they give a report. So they say, yeah, it's a wonderful land, everything is marvelous, it's so beautiful, and it's delicious fruits, and everything's fine. Eves, but there's one problem. Ki az ha'om ha'yoshiv aleh. They're very, very powerful people. If we will wage a war against them, we will never succeed. We'll never win the war. So Rashi comments from the Talmud, Rashi quotes from the Gemara, why did they start giving a praise of Eretz? So why didn't they just say, everything is terrible, we'll never succeed? Why didn't they just paint the full black picture? So Rashi quotes a comment, a psychological comment that the Talmud has, that if a person wants to fool the people and tell them a lie, if he's going to tell a lie from A to Z, everything is going to be a lie, no one will believe him. Someone will catch him on some part of the lie or another. Called about sheker, shame, nitchilos, and mitzas emes. If you don't start off with something that's emes, it won't have a kiyum. The people will not accept it. So that's why the Meragim had to start off by saying something that was emes. They said it's a wonderful country, it's beautiful, the sites are beautiful, and the mountains are beautiful, and the rivers are nice, and the terraces are delicious. But there's one little problem that the people are so strong, we'll never succeed when we wage battle against them. So here is the same thing. The Bible critics attack the tradition that we have for 3,000 years, that the Torah was a God-given Torah, given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, dictated word for word, even on a higher level than the other books of the prophets, higher level than the Nevi'im Ksuvim, where they just had a Chazon and a Mare, and they interpreted the vision that they had with divine inspiration that they happened to have. No, the Chumash was dictated word for word, letter for letter. So where did the Bible critics get this idea from, that the Torah is a composite text? The answer is because it's true. It says on the Chumash that the Torah that we have is a composite of three different texts. We have the introduction to many of the laws of the Torah, says, Vayadabar Hashem al Moshe Rabbeinu, and God spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying. So many times the Torah gives a little more, the Torah is a little more specific, says, Vayadabar Hashem al Moshe, Behar Sinai Lema, the opening pasuk in yesterday's Kriyas HaTorah, on Shabbat Dekriya, in Parshas Behar. Many times the Torah says, this law was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, the Har Sinai Lema. Many times the Torah will introduce it and say, Vadaba Shama Moshe, Oyel Moyed Lema. This name was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, Oyel Moyed. Oyel Moyed means after the Mishkan was erected, the Mishkan was put up after Ma'amin Har Sinai, way later, and during the course of the 40 years of traveling in the desert, every day, every week, Moshe Rabbeinu would go into Oyel Moyed, go into the Mishkan, and Hashem would reveal himself to Moshe Rabbeinu, give him a new dictation. So sometimes the Torah writes that a section of the Chumash was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and Oyel Moyed. And sometimes the Chumash Dvarim, the Torah said, introduces a din by writing Vayadabar Hashem al Moshe Me'arvas Moyel. Me'arvas Moyel was the very end of the 40 years. So it's clear from the text of the Chumash itself that there were three different versions of the Chumash. There was the version that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu and Har Sinai. four lap text days. Then there was text D. The version of the Chumash that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu in Oyel Moed during the course of the 40 years of traveling in the Midbar, Moshe Rabbeinu would enter into the Mishkan in the Oyel Moed, and God would dictate to him some. So then we have text C, the text of the Chumash that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu in Arvis Moed. And the rabbis of the Talmud have a whole discussion. That's the opening Rashi in his comment on Parshas Bahar. The first Rashi, beginning of Parshas Bahar, raises the issue. It doesn't quote, it's a whole discussion in the Gemara. It's a whole Daf Gemara in Chagiga, a whole Daf Gemara in Chazanish, has a whole essay on this in his Sefer, where he explains what is going on in the Gemara. That really the rabbis were bothered with this. They wanted to understand why were the three texts of the Chumash, and why is the Chumash a composite? The Chumash is a composite. Not the way the Apikursim say, not the way the Bible critics say, that it's a composite. None of it was written by God, none of it was written by Moshe Rabbeinu, some of it was written in the second temple, some of it was written in the third temple, the fourth temple. They keep on adding on more. It's a composite of so many different texts. That part is the Mikzah Sheker. But the Mikzah Semes starts off, with a Mikzah Semes. It says in the Chumash, inside the Chumash it says that this Chumash is a composite of three different texts. And the rabbi Tzaka wanted to know why were there three different texts. So Rabbi Shmuel had a dispute with Rabbi Akiva, two prominent Tanaim. Rabbi Shmuel with a whole group of other Tanaim. It wasn't just Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara in the first Perek in Chagiga says that all the Tanaim were involved in this dispute. And there are differences in halacha lemaisa, how you pasken on this issue. It's not some historical question. There are halachic ramifications based on this. So the view of Rabbi Shmuel and his group of Tanaim was, simply, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gave most of the mitzvahs at Har Sinai, but he didn't give all of the details. So some of the mitzvahs that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave all of the details at Har Sinai. So those mitzvahs were, all of the details were given at Har Sinai, so there's no need to rewrite the text, no need to dictate a new text. So that text prevailed throughout. There were some other mitzvahs where HaKadosh Baruch Hu just gave the highlights of the mitzvah, he gave some of the major aspects of the mitzvah, but he didn't give all the details at Har Sinai. So later, during the course of the traveling in the Midbar in the 40 years, Moshe Rabbeinu was given a prophecy when he would enter into the Oyel Moed, and he was dictated a new text of that mitzvah which had more details than the original text. Of course, if a person writes a book, visualize a bus of a dome, a human being writes a book, and then on one section he realizes that it's shvach, he didn't write it well, he wants to add on some more, he wants to schmaltz it up. So he rewrites that section, so when he finally sent it to the printer, So they're going to use the new version. They're not going to use the old version. The new version has much more than the old version. So those mitzvahs that were completed during the course of the traveling in the Midbar during the 40 years, so that text was stronger than the first one, had many more details. So that text is the one that appears in the Chumash. Then there were some mitzvahs where not only in Har Sinai were they not given all the details, not only in Oyel Moed during the course of the traveling in the 40 years, but they're still not given all the details. All the details were not given until the very end, until the very end of the 40 years. All of the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. After Moshe Rabbeinu died, there's no more Torah. That's the closing pasuk in Chumash Vayikra, the closing pasuk in Chumash Bamidbar, that the Pesukim stress, and the Talmud points this out. It says, Ela HaMitzvahs, Asher Tziv Hashem, Har Sinai, Yad Moshe. These and only these are the mitzvahs that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, and no other prophet after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu can add on any other mitzvah. A prophet could come up with a Hayrah Shah once in a while, Kadosh Baruch Hu tells you, wage war, don't wage war, do this, do that, but it's not going to be one of the mitzvahs of the Torah. It's not going to be a mitzvah in the sense that it's binding throughout all the generations and all the countries and all people. No. When we speak of a mitzvah means Ein Lashon Tzavah, Lashon Zivah, Miyad Oladurz. That's the opening Rashi in Parashat Tzav. When you speak of a mitzvah, Torah mitzvahs means mitzvahs that are binding throughout all the generations of all the countries of the world. So mitzvahs were only given by God through Moshe Rabbeinu. But it was given at three different stages. The first version was given at Har Sinai. Then during the Oyel Moed period, during the 40 years of traveling in the desert, some of the mitzvahs that were given more detail. Then, right before the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Jewish people were in the area that's known as Arvis Moed, then a third text was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu. Sometimes that third text has more details than the second text. So that's the view, this is the opinion that's not accepted. So this was the view of Rabbi Shmuel, that sometimes the Torah clearly is a composite of three different texts. It says so itself, says on the Chumash itself. Sometimes the first text was sufficient on those mitzvahs where all of the details were given in Har Sinai, so the first text was used. Sometimes where the details were not fully given to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai, but they were given later during the course of the traveling of the 40 years, So then text D is to be used in the Chumash because it's more detailed than text F. And although several mitzvahs were even during the course of traveling in the Oil Moed, during the course of traveling in the 40 years, all of the details were not yet given, and they were only given finally in Arvis Moed, so then Rabbi Shlom said, use text C over there. That we understand. And Rabbi Akiva disagrees with Rabbi Shmuel, and that's the more accepted opinion. Rashi in his commentary on Chumash, on the first pasuk in Parshas Bahar, quotes the view of Rabbi Akiva. The Talmud says that whenever there's a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and the other Tanaim, the opinion of Rabbi Akiva is the one that prevails, generally speaking. He's a more dominant figure in the Talmud than Rabbi Shmuel is. So the view of Rabbi Akiva was the one that was accepted, a very fascinating view, namely, that all of the mitzvahs were given at Har Sinai with all the details from A to Z, everything was given in one text. Everything was repeated all over again from A to Z, all the 613 mitzvahs. So each mitzvah has 1,001 details. Everything was repeated again in a second version, in a second text, during the course of the 40 years of traveling. Then everything was repeated again in a third text, in Arvis Moyov, everything from A to Z the same, everything the same, but with a different version. What was the significance of that? Maybe we'll talk about that a little later. The Torah was given in three different versions at three different times, but each text boils down to the same thing. It says the same thing. It's not that the second text contains more details than the first, and the third contains more details than the second, just another way, another version of saying the same thing. And then after the 40 years of Rav, then the Rabbi Shalom said, okay, now I want you to make the final book, the final Chamisha Chamisha Torah. So sometimes he said, use text A. Sometimes he said, the Torah is the composite of the three different texts. Sometimes the Rabbi Shalom said, I want you to use text A. Sometimes he said, I want you to use text D. And sometimes he said, I want you to use text C. So that's why sometimes the Chumash introduces a din by writing Adav Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai. This is text A. Sometimes Adav Hashem Moshe Me'oil Moed Leimah. And sometimes Adav Hashem Moshe Me'arvis Me'ev Leimah. We have the three different texts. So getting back again, what do we mean when we say that not only do we believe in Torah Min HaShamayim, we believe in Torah Min Sinai? Does it mean that the text of the Chumash, it doesn't mean that our obligation today, in Shnas Tov Shin Nun Gimel, in 1993, our obligation today to keep God's mitzvah stems from the Maamar HaSinai, that's not true. It says on the Chumash, our obligation stems from the second covenant, from the second priesthood that was made, that's recorded in Parshas Yisavoy and Yitzavim, that was made before the death of Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the 40 years. Nor does it mean that we believe in Torah HaSinai in the sense that the Torah, this Torah, is the text that was dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai. That's only one of the three texts. It says in the Chumash that it is a composite of three different texts. Sometimes it's text A that was dictated at Har Sinai, sometimes text B, and sometimes text C. So what exactly does this phrase mean? What exactly does this term mean? That everybody stresses. The Orthodox believe in term in HaShemayim, and we believe in term in Sinai. What is that around my term in Sinai? So if you look in the Talmud, the Gemara tells you what it means. The Gemara speaks about what it means, Torah Misina. The Talmud comments on the pasuk in Chumash Dvarim. You should transmit the Torah to your children and to your grandchildren. What exactly does that pasuk mean? So the Ramban in his commentary on Chumash writes that the simple translation of the pasuk means you should tell over the story of Maamar HaSinai, just like we have a mitzvah to tell over the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Once a year, every year on Pesach night, we have an obligation to tell Bariches at long length the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And once a year, every year, we have a mitzvah to tell over the story of Parshas Zohar, about Amalek, the way Amalek attacked the Jewish people. So too, the Ramban says, once a year, every year, we do it every Shavuot, once a year, every year, we have an obligation to read Kriyas HaTorah, take out the Sefer Torah, and read the story of Maamar HaSinai, the way God revealed himself to the Jewish people and proclaimed the Aseres HaDibros, and told the Jewish people that he wants them to be Atem Tiulim HaMlechas Kohanim, a Goy Kodosh, we have to be a holy nation, different, Am Segula, different from all the other nations in the world, very different. We have mitzvah, we have obligations, we have restrictions, limitations, and so on. We celebrate differently, we mourn differently, we think differently, we react differently, our instincts are different, everything is different. Baruch Shalom gave us everything different. So this, we have to repeat this story at least once a year, every year, and we choose to do it on Shavuot. We read it also when we read Parshas HaShavuot on Yisroel, when we read it in the middle of the summer, we read Chumash Devarim again, and we read about the Aseres HaDibros. So the Ramban says this is the simple translation of the pasuk: "V'haydaitom livanecha v'livnei banecha." You should tell over to your children, to your grandchildren. Each generation should transmit to the next generation. Yom Asher Amarato livnei Hashem Elokecha b'choreg choreg is Har Sinai. You should tell over the story of Kabbalas HaTorah at Har Sinai. This is the simple translation of the pasuk. The Talmud, however, says that when God dictated the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, He dictated it in such a way that there's more than one level of interpretation on any given pasuk. In fact, there are many levels. The Talmud even says in one place, Shivim Panim LaTorah can have 70 levels of interpretation on any one given pasuk. We're not going to give 70, we'll give one more level of interpretation. This is not such an impossible thing to understand. We know that there are human beings who write books where there's an obvious meaning and then there's a hidden meaning. And sometimes there are human beings who write books with two hidden meanings. An obvious pashut shot, and then there are two hidden meanings. So it's not so impossible to understand, to visualize that the Baruch Shalom dictated the Chumash to Moshe Rabbeinu with the pshuto shel mikra, with the simple pshat. And the Talmud says the simple pshat may not be rejected. You cannot reject ein hamikra yetzer de pshuto. The pashut shot is always correct. But in addition to the pashut shot, there may be additional levels of interpretation. It may even be more than one additional level of interpretation. Maybe other, maybe even up to 70 levels. Additional levels of interpretation on any given pasuk. The Talmud never gives 70. The Talmud just makes such a statement. You can have even 70. The Talmud only gives one usually. A simple pshat and one hidden, additional level of interpretation. So commenting on this pasuk, the Talmud interprets it as follows. This is not the simple translation. Simple translation is Vayidaitem Kovanecha. You should tell over the story of Maimon Har Sinai. So the Talmud in Brachos has an additional comment on the pasuk. You should transmit the Torah to your children, and your children should transmit the Torah to your grandchildren, just like God revealed Himself at Har Sinai, and at the time that He transmitted the Torah to you, and everything was with a tremendous drama, so too you should transmit the Torah to your children, to your grandchildren, in the same way. How exactly in the same way we have to blow shofar when we transmit the Torah to our children? We don't blow shofar. You have to have fire. You have to have thunder. We don't have thunder. We don't have fire. So what exactly does that mean? So the Talmud tells us what it means. That just like at the time of Kabbalas HaTorah, just like at the time of Maimon Har Sinai, the Torah was given to Bnei Yisrael with tremendous preparation. The men and the women, everybody had to go to mikveh in advance to purify themselves, purify their bodies, purify their hearts, purify their souls. And there was tremendous trembling, awe, and fear. There was pachad, there was tremendous Yerushalayim at the time of Har Sinai. It says, Vayar Ham Bayanu, the people jumped away out of pachad. Vayamdu Merachak, they were afraid to stand there at Har Sinai. There was tremendous pachad, there was tremendous Yerushalayim. So through the Talmud comments, just like the Torah was originally given, the aim of the year of the Reses Uviziyah, the Torah was given with the year of the people were, they realized, they were told this is something dead serious. This is very serious business here. It's not a joke. So too, when we transmit the Torah throughout all future generations, the Talmud says, the students are certainly not permitted to joke around in the middle of the shiur, to crack jokes. The Talmud is not sure whether the Rebbe is allowed to crack jokes. The Talmud says, because we know that many of the Rabbanim used to open up their shiur with a milsim divinichus. Many of the Rabbanim had the practice in the days of Talmud, and even in later generations, they would open up the shiur with a story. Many of the rabbis do that today. When they give a shiur, so they open up with a story to make everybody comfortable with a milsim divinichus, and then they enter into the shiur. So the Talmud says, before the Rebbe starts the shiur, so he didn't start yet, then he can crack a joke. But what if he's in the middle of the shiur? Is it permissible for the Rebbe to crack jokes? It's only prohibited for the students to be joking. In other words, the Rebbe Shlom can crack all the jokes he wants. But Bnei Yisrael had to be serious at Har Sinai. Oh no! The Rebbe Shlom also can only crack jokes before Har Sinai begins. But once you're in the middle of the drama of the Siras HaTorah, Kabbalas HaTorah, then neither the Rebbe nor the Talmud is allowed to crack jokes. So the Talmud is not sure about this. These are two opinions in the Gemara in the end of Ksuvim. Or the Talmud has a famous comment in Gemara Gittin, that at the time that the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu to transmit to Bnei Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu was told to tell Bnei Yisrael, "Stav l'chos advarim ha'ela." God tells Moshe Rabbeinu, "Write down stav l'chos advarim ha'ela. Write down these things. What is stav l'chos? Write down the text of the Chumash that I'm dictating to you. Stav l'chos advarim ha'ela sounds like it's only these things and not other things. Ki Al-pi sounds like Baal-peh, Torah Shebaal-peh. So the Talmud says that's what it means. Write down the Torah Shebaal-peh, ki, despite the fact, the word ki has many different meanings in the Hebrew language. Every so often in Tanakh, very often the word ki means because. This is ki, because of that. And sometimes, every so often, the word ki means just the opposite, despite the fact that this and this. Like Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshas Kisisa requests of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should be with Bnei Yisrael, ki am kisheyorechu, because we are a tough-necked nation. That's the reason why. So the Ibn Ezra says, no, ki means despite the fact that we're pretty hard to get along with, Moshe Rabbeinu requests of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he should be with us, ki am kisheyorechu. And every so often you have such a pasuk, so the word ki means avalti. I take for example the pasuk in Mishlei, I think, Tuv tam edas lamdeni, with the Mishlei of Tehillim, Tuv tam edas lamdeni ki b'mitzvoyseche hemonti. You usually say that pasuk before Kiyur Shem. Tuv tam edas lamdeni says, the Iri comments on that pasuk, David HaMelech requests of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, tell me the reasons for the mitzvahs. Tam edas lamdeni. Even though I'm going to do the mitzvahs anyway, I'm going to perform the mitzvahs whether I understand or I don't understand. It's a tzivay Hashem, I'm going to do God's wish. But still he says, Tuv tam edas, explain to me the reasons for the mitzvahs. Ki, despite the fact that the mitzvahs echa hem mati, have a moon anyway, I'm going to do it anyway. So too in this pasuk, the Chachamim had a tradition that Ksav l'cho, this pasuk at the end of Parshas Kisisa, Sav l'cho es ha-dvarim ha-eile, Moshe Rabbeinu is commanded by God to write down the Torah Shebaal Peh. These things are not the other things. It's important to write down the Chamisha Chamishah Torah ki, despite the fact that ki ha-dvarim ha-eile karat yit chabris v'es Yisrael. Even though the real covenant, the real bris is made between God and the Jewish people, and the oral law, we have two parts of the Torah. We have the written text and the oral Torah, the Torah Shebaal Peh, and the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebaal Peh, really all the nations in the world can read. The only thing that we have that's unique to the Jewish people is only the Torah Shebaal Peh. So what do we have to bother writing the Chumash for? Why do we bother reading Kriyas HaTorah? If that's shared in common by all the nations of the world, so let's just forget about the Chamisha Chumash Torah, as many yeshiva people have done. Let's just forget about the whole Tanakh. Let's just stress studying Talmud. So the Rebbeinu Shlom says, no, despite the fact that Al-Fi Adram El Karati Yit Chabris, even though the covenant is made with the Jewish people, the Nichras of Bris in Israel El Al-Torah Shebaal Peh, decreases with the covenant that makes the Jewish people unique and different from all the other nations of the world is the Torah Shebaal Peh. The Torah Shebaal Peh is shared by everybody. When they crossed over the Yarden after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, they crossed over the Yarden. So Yeshua ben Nun engraved by her hatred and translated into 70 languages the whole Chumash. Why did he translate it into 70 languages? That all the non-Jewish people should come and read it in any language that they're permitted to study. The only thing that is prohibited for the non-Jews to look into it to study is the Torah Shebaal Peh. So Moshe Rabbeinu has commanded that we shouldn't neglect the Tanakh. We should not neglect the Chumash. So Mechas Advar Ma'ele, write down the Torah Shebichsav, ki, despite the fact that the Kriyas Brit, the covenant that makes the Jewish people unique and different, is only going to be in connection with the Torah Shebaal Peh. So the Talmud comments on that passage that we see that there are two sections to the Torah. There's the written Torah, the Torah Shebichsav, and then you have the Torah Shebaal Peh, and the meaning of the pasuk seems to be, this was the tradition, that one is not permitted to recite Torah Shebichsav Baal Peh. Let's say you get together in the shul, and you have to read Kriyas HaTorah on Monday or Thursday mornings on Shabbos and Yom Tov. What if you don't have a kosher sefer Torah? So can you lay Kriyas HaTorah from a printed chumash? Let's say the Baal Kori knows the Seder Baal Peh. He knows the Seder by heart. Can he lay the Kriyas HaTorah by heart? So the Talmud says, no, that's prohibited, that's forbidden. Dvarim Shebichsav, I ator ha-shoy yomen al peh. Anything, the Haftorah, the Kriyas HaTorah, the Gilas Esther, whenever you're going to recite something to the Tzibur, Kriyashma I recite to myself, Asher Yesh Revisech I say to myself, whatever Pirkei Tilim I say to myself, that's okay. I can say that Baal Peh. Arami Abiravi, whatever that I'm saying, Baal Peh, that's permissible. But if I want to say something to transmit Torah to others, like Kriyas HaTorah in Shul, like Kriyas HaTorah in Shul, when you want to transmit the Torah to others, that the Torah Shebichsav has to be transmitted in Perchak Sav. Dvarim Shebichsav, whatever it is from Tanakh, may not be transmitted Baal Peh. And the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, originally the thing was that the Dvarim Shebaal Peh, the Torah Shebaal Peh, may not be transmitted to Ksav. It doesn't mean that they're not allowed to write down notes. They always had notes. The Gemara speaks about the Megillah story. The Gemara in different places speaks about the fact that the Tanakh used to have notes, just to make sure they wouldn't forget all of the oral tradition. But the shiur would be given bal peh. They would look in their notes, and then they would get up and give a shiur and transmit the Torah shebal peh, bal peh. And until the later generations, until the days the Rambam writes, until the days of Ravina Rav Ashi. You know that Rabbi Yudah Hanasi was the editor of the Mishnayos, but at the time that he edited, editor doesn't mean that he composed the Mishnayos. These Mishnayos were there from generations and generations before the time of Rabbi Yudah Hanasi. These were Mishnayos. Some of those Mishnayos are from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. The commentaries point that the Mishnayos are Zel Mekoyman that we have in the Siddur from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. It says Lefnim and Akloim. Speaks about eating kach and kach and Lefnim and Akloim. That terminology only existed in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. In all the later generations, there was no such concept. So the Abu Dram points out that that text of that Mishnah wasn't written by Rabbi Yudah Hanasi. He edited the Mishnah. That text is a Mishnah Keduma in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. When we say that Rabbi Yudah Hanasi died around the year 225 or so, 220. Rabbi Yudah Hanasi, who edited the Mishnahs, he's not the one who wrote the Mishnahs. He wasn't the author. These Mishnahs were there for generations before. He decided what should belong in the Mishnahs, what should not. But even after he edited the Mishnahs, it was still taught Baal Peh, still taught orally in the yeshivas. They would transmit everything orally. It wasn't written down until a few hundred years later, to the time of Ravina Rav Ashi. Ravina Rav Ashi were among them, the very last Amoraims, and their generation, they saw that if we're just going to keep on trying to transmit the Torah, Baal Peh, orally, things are going to be forgotten. It's not enough to keep private notes, and then to give a public lecture, and the lecture is going to be Baal Peh. You have to study from a text. Like we usually do in the yeshivas. We study from the Mishnayos inside, we study from the Gemara inside, we read the Tosfos inside, we read the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch, we read everything inside, and we analyze the text. But that was originally prohibited, to transmit the Torah, to write down the Torah Shmal Peh, that was okay. Like to recite Kriya Shma Bal Peh, that's okay. The prohibition against saying Torah Shabbatza Bal Peh doesn't mean against saying Kriya Shma Bal Peh. It means when you're transmitting Torah Shabbatza to others, you have to transmit it in Peh Haksa. The Balkori who lays, we have Satari who lays in the Gila, has to lay from a text. It cannot be cited Baal Peh. So to over here, this prohibition of writing down Torah Baal Peh, well, there was nothing wrong with writing down. They always used to write down notes. In the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, they also wrote down notes. How could they possibly remember everything? It's humanly impossible. Of course they wrote notes. But when they were transmitting the Torah to the next generation, it's a din in Mesira Satari. The Torah was being transmitted from one generation to the next. The Rebbe wouldn't give a shiur from a written text. Torah Baal Peh. He would have notes, but then he would give the shiur orally. The Torah would be transmitted. Baal Peh. Torah Baal Peh would be transmitted. Baal Peh. Till the days of Rabbi Rav Ashi, they saw that it's all going to be forgotten. So they said, under such difficult circumstances, they said based on the pasuk in the Chumash, based on the pasuk in Suvim, Eis Lasim Hashem Efer Teresecha, that sometimes you have to violate it. But that's why today we're all in violation of this din. That we all study Gemara. The shiur am I given from a text? We teach from the text. But this din, that the Torah Shabbatzav must be transmitted to others in Peh Haksav, and the Torah Shabbatzav must be transmitted after Baal Peh, that was observed until around 1500 years ago, until the days of Rabbeinu Rav Ashi. These dinim are all based on the principle of Torah Misinai. What does Torah Misinai mean? The style of learning Torah, the style of transmitting Torah has to be the same way the Torah was transmitted to Har Sinai to Bnei Yisrael. The aim of the year of the reference of the Ziyah with seriousness, so too the Torah has to be transmitted from one generation to the next. The Torah should be transmitted to the next generation, just like the drama of Har Sinai was not just the once in the history of the world, that drama was in order to impress the Bnei Yisrael with Yerushalayim. No! The whole drama of Maimon Har Sinai was in order to show us a sample of how we should transmit the Torah to the next generation. And the Gemara learns that more than all the dinim of Kriyas HaTorah. I learned that, the Shulchan Aruch quotes from the Gemara, from the Talmud Yerushalmi mainly, in Maseches Megillah. The laws of Kriyas HaTorah are all patterned after the style of Kabbalah HaTorah Har Sinai. Moshe Yidabe, Bohalakim Yanani Bekol, about having a Balkori and the Turgaman and the Shamas. Asarasur, everything is learned up in Har Sinai. The Torah has to be transmitted to the people the same way it was transmitted at Har Sinai to the people. The aim of the year of the rest is of the Ziya, with the Sarsur and Dvarim Shebitzav have to be transmitted to Tzav, and Dvarim Shebal Peh have to be transmitted to Baal Peh. This is the real meaning of the expression Torah Misina. It doesn't mean what people think it means. It doesn't mean that our obligation today to observe the laws of the Torah stems from the Bris, the covenant that was entered upon the Har Sinai. That's not true. Our obligation today stems from the later Bris. Nor does it mean that the text of the Chumash that we have today, the text of the Chumash was dictated word for word, letter for letter to Moshe Rabbeinu, but it wasn't all dictated at Har Sinai. It's a composite, it says on the Chumash, it's a composite of three different texts. Text A was at Har Sinai, text B was an oil moed, and text C and text C was an Arvis moed. When we speak of Torah Nisinai, what we mean is that the transmission of the Torah, the way we teach Torah to our children and to our students, and the way we transmit the Torah to the next generation should be done in the same style and fashion that the Torah was transmitted to us at Har Sinai. I'd just like to spend a little time commenting on Rabbi Akiva's view. We mentioned earlier the three different texts that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Chumash as we have it now is a composite of three different texts. A, B, and C, all three were dictated to Moshe Rabbeinu by HaKadosh Baruch Hu a long, long, long time ago. So what was the need for three different versions? So Rabbi Shmuel's opinion makes sense. That's the opinion that's not accepted. Rabbi Shmuel's opinion makes a lot of sense. We understand. If many of the mitzvahs were not given in all of their details at Har Sinai, and then when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave it a second time during the course of the 40 years of traveling in the desert, and Moshe Rabbeinu would enter Oyel Moed, would enter into the Mishkan, and he would be given more details, and he would dictate, God dictated a new text to him. On those mitzvahs, the second text was used, because it was more detailed, it was better than the first text. And then there were some mitzvahs where even during the 40 years of traveling, when Moshe Rabbeinu went into the Oyel Moed, they were still not given all of the details. They were erst only given, they were first given at the end of the 40 years when they were in Arvis Moed. So then we understand that on those mitzvahs you should use text C. So if one would have adopted Rabbi Shmuel's opinion, we would understand what the story is all about, that the Torah is a composite of three different texts. And he gave it in three different versions. All the three versions boil down to the same thing. So what did he dictate the three different versions for? And then after all the 40 years, he tells Moshe Rabbeinu, okay, now we're coming to the publication time. So on these mitzvahs use text A, on those use text B, and on these use text C. And it's all the same thing anyway. It's done. He's having fun. Making more versions. What was it all about? This is a very important concept. The background to understanding this concept of Rabbi Akiva says what the din is. He has to put on tefillin on Tuesday morning. Sure. He doesn't have to call up his rabbi. Do I have to put on tefillin on Tuesday morning? He says in the Shulchan Aruch, he put on tefillin every day, except for Shabbos and Yom. So there's no shayla. The person has some things are not explicit in the Shulchan Aruch. The person calls up his rabbi and he asks, rabbi, what's the din? So the rabbi tells him what the din is. And then he starts to wonder. He thinks the rabbi must have misunderstood. It doesn't make sense. The Torah tells us that if we have a rabbi who knows how to learn better than us, we know that we don't know the deal. And we think that this rabbi is learned, we think that he's honest, we think that he's intelligent, we think that he's not a politician, he's not trying to say something from some political, we think he's being honest and religious. So if that rabbi, and we were asking in our shayla, that rabbi postings a din, it says in the Torah, we should listen to his psak, we're obligated to follow his psak, even if it seems to be very strange. This is the same in any discipline. Let's say you have different chemicals, that seem to be harmless, and then when you mix the chemicals together, they can cause an explosion. So a layman will look at this, a chemist will tell me if you mix these two chemicals, it'll cause an explosion. So, or if you mix these two things together, it'll be poisonous. This It says what the din is. He has to put on tefillin on Tuesday morning. Sure. He does not have to call up his rabbi. Do I have to put on tefillin on Tuesday morning? Says in the Shulchan Aruch, he put on tefillin every day, except the Shabbos and Yom. So there's no shy. A person has some things are not explicit in the Shulchan Aruch. The person calls up his rabbi and he asks, rabbi, what's the din? So the rabbi tells him what the din is. And then he starts to wonder. He thinks the rabbi must have misunderstood. It doesn't make sense to him. The Torah tells us that if we have a rabbi who knows how to learn better than us, we know that we don't know the din. And we think that this rabbi is learned, we think that he's honest, we think that he's intelligent, we think that he's not a politician, he's not trying to say something from some political, he seems to be an honest individual. So if that rabbi, and we were asking in our shayla, that that rabbi costumes the din, it says in the Torah, we should listen to his psak, we're obligated to follow his psak, even if it sounds to be, even if it seems to be very strange. This is the same in any discipline. Let's say you have different chemicals that seem to be harmless, and then when you mix the chemicals together, they can cause an explosion. So a layman will look at this, a chemist will tell me if you mix these two chemicals, it'll cause an explosion. So, or if you mix these two things together, it'll be poisonous. This alone is not poisonous, that alone is not poisonous. Mix them together, it'll be poisonous. So if you ask me, I'm a layman, and I never took any chemistry, something that I took chemistry for the non-science majors in college. But yes, I think that that's ridiculous. How can it be? If this is not poison, if this is not poison, mix it together, how can it be poison? If this doesn't explode and this doesn't explode, why should it explode if you mix it together? That doesn't make any sense. But mix it together, it's going to explode. And if you eat it, you drink it, you got to die, it is poisonous. So you can't ask any kashas. Every discipline has its own logic. Physics has its own logic. Philosophy has its own logic. Mathematics has, and halacha has its own logic also. If you go to an expert in the field of halacha, in the field of theory, yes, what's the din? Even if it doesn't seem to be too logical, I have a shaila, rabbi, I don't know the din. Is it A or B? The rabbi says, neither, it's C. C is out of the question. I mean, that's utterly ridiculous. It's either A or B. The rabbi says, no, it's C. So, look, I admitted that I didn't know the din. This is the rabbi that I asked all of my other shailas, and everything the rabbi said until now seems to be intelligent. So the Torah tells me I should accept the psak of the rabbi. And the Torah says, you're not permitted to... You're not permitted to violate the psak that the Rabbanim give you. You shouldn't stray either to the right, shouldn't go neither to the right nor to the left. So Rashi has a famous comment on that pasuk. Rashi quotes from the Sifrei. I feel omer b'chol yamin shu small bal small shulimin. Even if the rabbi tells you that this is your left hand and this is your right hand, dead wrong. You still have to listen to the rabbi. That's the question, how can that be? When you study the Gemara, when you study Mishnayos, Harius, the very first Mishnah, the very first Yerushalmi, the first Mishnah, Harius says it's supposed to be not so. Commenting on the same passage, only if they tell you, you mean Shulim, not Moshe Osman. If the rabbi tells him Sak and it's wrong, I ask the Shad, if the rabbi tells me that it is C, I say, is it A or B? He tells me C. He says, C is out of the question. I know the Beferish, he says that C is wrong. Rabbi says, no, he insists that it's C. So if I know the rabbi is wrong, I'm not permitted to listen to his Sak. There are those people who think, whatever the rabbi says is fine. Let's say the rabbi gives a hechsher on a certain food product. And I know that rabbi is not reliable. In every community you have such a situation. I don't know what the situation is. I live in the New York area, so it's the same all over the world. But let's say there's a rabbi, not too reliable, gives a hechsher on a certain food product. I know he's not reliable, so what? I have the right to eat it and say, he's going to burn again. But giving, no, if I know he's not reliable, so I'm not allowed to follow him. It's not that the rabbi gives up. I remember once in shul, they were benching Rosh Chodesh. The Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh, they were benching Rosh Chodesh. In some shuls, the practice is, the minhag is that the rabbi benches Rosh Chodesh. I used to daven in the little shtiebel, the Yosef shtiebel in Washington Heights. So Rabbi Perlov, the one who's now the Novo Minsk Rebbe, then his father was the last. His father was the Novo Minsk Rebbe. So he was benching Rosh Chodesh. So he announced Rosh Chodesh will be whatever on Wednesday. And all the Balabatim screamed out, it's wrong, it's going to be Thursday. So he said it over again, Rosh Chodesh will be Thursday. He tried to correct himself. So I was standing next to that old time Yeket and Shul from Berlin. He's not from Frankfurt, he's from Berlin. He told me if this would have happened, he said in German, if this would have happened in the big Shul by Rabbi Breuer, who's still alive, Rosh Chodesh would have been on Wednesday. Rosh Chodesh would be on Wednesday. Rabbi Breuer doesn't have the power to change Rosh Chodesh. If it's wrong, it's wrong. If the rabbi made a mistake, it's wrong. There's nothing to discuss. So what do we mean? I feel like you mentioned it's small, but small. So it doesn't mean if the rabbi costumes an error, the psak is binding. The reason why the psak of the rabbi in general is binding, why is the psak ever binding? It's because the Talmud tells us we assume that if he's an honest rabbi and a learned individual, and a sincere person, that the Rabbani Shalom will give him a divine assistance and will give him a siyata d'shmaya to pass him properly, not to make a mistake. The Talmud says, whenever you have a bezin judging on a case, so we have a pasuk in Tehillim that says, that the Rabbani Shalom is always present to assist the dayanim in their judgment, and we assume that the psak is the correct one. And Talmud says, not only when you have a bezin judging a case, even when you have a shayla v'sevehefe, have a pasuk, have a shabbat, have a kashrus, have a taras ha'mishpacha, the Talmud quotes the other pasuk, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu will assist the Talmid HaChachamim in every generation to pass him properly. That's the reason why we assume that the Pesach of the Talmid HaChachamim is binding, because we assume that they're passing properly. And when the Sifra comments, the Sifra comments on the Pasuk, Afilom Lecha Yimin Shul Smav, Asmol Shul Yimin, it does mean if you know the Rabbi is passing wrong, that the Pesach is binding even when it's in there. It's absolutely not true. I remember years ago, there was one year that Herman Buch taught English literature. I remember what, American literature or British literature, I'm not sure. He taught English at Yeshiva College for 1 year. So that was before my time. So I had, some of you may remember, we had Professor Fleischer. He retired in. So Fleischer used to teach English literature. So he told us that Herman Buch told him during that year that he was at Yeshiva College that the theme of the Cain mutiny is that authority is binding even when it's in error, and the source of that theme is this Rashi and Kumsh. That authority is binding even when it's in error. So the students told Dr. Fleischer, and with all due respect, that's not what Rashi said. That cannot be. Authority is not binding when it's in error. Rashi means, Rashi's quoting the Sifra. You have to listen to the Talmud Chacham when he passes in the Shaila, even if you think that it's absurd. I'm a layman. Of course it's absurd when a physicist tells me something, it'll sound absurd to me also. When a chemist will tell me something in my layman's logic, I'll think also it's absurd. When a philosopher, when a mathematician, when anyone tells me something, I'm not an expert in that field. Every discipline has its own logic. That's what it means in Rashi. I feel near MBA. Even if you think that it's absolutely impossible, but this fellow is an expert, so he's supposed to believe what he said is correct. But it's not that the authority is binding when it's an error. If it's an error, it's an error. You're not permitted to follow it. The reason why the psak is binding is because we assume that it's a correct psak. So the rabbis were bothered with the question on this assumption that we are obligated to follow the shul. When we ask a rabbi, it doesn't necessarily mean the rabbi gives shul. Let's say some people like to daven in the shul. This rabbi gives nice drushes. He's a very pleasant fellow. He has a nice way. He speaks nicely to the people. But as far as asking Shana, they will never ask this rabbi, they ask the rabbi in the other shul. Whatever. Okay, so you have to pick out the rabbi, whom each one has to pick out a rabbi whom he sincerely thinks is learned and honest and intelligent and sensitive and understanding. And knows how to pass Shana, because you can't just pick a person whom you don't think is learned and think that the Rebbe Shalom is going to give a lesson on Shemayim that he should pass him properly. You have to. It's really a siyag v'nishmai. It's like a madrega of nevuah. It's Tzor Hashem Nereh. It's like a madrega of Ruach HaKodesh of nevuah. You can't expect the Rebbe Shalom to give this madrega of Ruach HaKodesh of nevuah to a person who is not prepared. That would be a tremendous mess. For that, we can't expect that. But the person asks the shalom of his rabbi. So the reason why it's binding is because we assume that the Rebbe Shalom gave the siyag v'nishmai. So the question. So the Talmud raises the question, how can it be? But the Balabatim in this shul hold that their rabbi is a big Talmud Chacham and he is, and he's honest, and he's sincere, he's intelligent, he passes one way. And the Balabatim, the other shul, have a rabbi, and they think that he's honest and sincere and everything intelligent, he passes a different way. So the Rebbe Shalom gave him a Siyat Shmai to pass this way, and the Rebbe Shalom gave him a Siyat Shmai to pass the other way, and all the Balabatim have to listen to what their rabbi said. The Rebbe Shalom is talking out both sides of his mouth. Why did the Rebbe Shalom help him say one way? The same Rebbe Shalom helped him say a different way. How can that be? So the Talmud said, that's right. The answer is, Elu Elu, Dibre L'Kimcha. Yeah, like they tell a story about the two people came to the Torah by the rabbis. So the rabbi, one presents his case, and the rabbi says, you're right. So the other one presents his case, the rabbi says, you're right. And the rabbi's wife says, how can it be? How can it be the Rebbe Shalom? He says, you're right also. So what does it have to mean? So it means the following. The commentaries on the Gemara explain what it means. Eilu li'eilu divrei Elokim Chayim means the following. The Rebbe Shalom gave us, let's say, Tariyak Mitzvahs, 613. And every mitzvah, let's say, there are 1,001 details. There are more than 1,001. Let's say, for argument's sake, every mitzvah has 1,001 details. So you multiply 1,001 times 613, you get so many details. if you have both rabbis that are equally learned, they're both looking at the same body of information. When you look at the same things from a different perspective, you get a different overall picture. We're looking in this room, so there are pictures on the walls, there's a mic over here, there's a lectern over here, there are people, there are chairs, there are tables, and all the people in the room. So I'm looking from one perspective, you're looking from another perspective, the man sitting over here has a different perspective, the woman sitting over there has a totally different perspective. Every person in the room is looking at everything in the room, they see everything, but from a totally different perspective. So all of the things that you see are the same. Everybody's looking at the same, all the Talmid HaChamim, the both rabbis of the both congregation looking at the same 613 mitzvahs, each mitzvah containing the same 1,001 details. They all have the same knowledge. Now it'll come a generation in the year, Tav Shin Nun Gimel, 1993, it's going to come a generation. You have a new Shaila that doesn't say explicitly. The rabbis are still killing themselves about the issue of the brain death. Why are they fighting so much about the brain death? When you determine a patient is dead? Because it doesn't say explicitly in the Chumash, and it doesn't say explicitly anywhere in the Mishnah, and it doesn't say explicitly anywhere in the Talmud. And even if someone is convinced that yes or no, convinced Morgan, but it doesn't say, Sakh was binding on all the people from their Sheva, then there wasn't a contradiction. The other 11 twelfths of the Klal Yisrael, the other 90% of the Jewish nation is doing otherwise, and let them do otherwise. It's all the same religion, and there's just variety within the religion. That's not a problem. Once you come to the Bez Nagodl and Yerushalayim and you pose the Shaila to them and they give a Pesach, so then it's Farfam, then everybody has to follow the Pesach of the central authority of the Bez Nagodl. But if it doesn't go so far and there's no need to bring it to the Bez Nagodl, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with having every Shevet have a variety in Avodas Hashem. That's why there were 12 different Shorim. Each Shevet had a different approach to the Bez Nagodl. So this is the idea behind, this is what the commentary says, this is the idea behind having the three different versions of the Torah Shebichtav, according to Rabbi Akiva.